Thank you for listening to the serialized podcast version of The Mark of a Druid, a fiction fantasy novel written and read by Rhonda R. Carpenter. I suggest that you start the story at the beginning, and to be sure that you get all of the episodes, go to themarkofadruid.com or rhondacarpenter.com. Episode 13, Chapter 20, The Roles Reverse. Eve had been frantically searching for her and was waiting on the corner of Crescent Street. She'd spent the last hour searching the beachfront looking for Andrea, Eve's gaze always coming back to the water as she scanned the area. She whispered a silent prayer over and over again that Andrea had not gone into the water. When she didn't find her, she had returned to the hotel twice, and still no Andrea. She paced under the streetlight and berated herself for getting Andrea involved in any of this, whatever this was. Her growing distress was clear in the fold of her arms over her chest, the rigid posture of her back, and the tight knot her eyebrows formed just above the bridge of her nose. Eve was contemplating her next move when she saw Andrea round the corner. Relief flooded over her like a desperate mother who had found her lost child. "Where were you? I was worried." Eve slipped her arms around Andrea's shoulder and gave her a bear-like hug. Looking up into Andrea's eyes, Eve continued, "You've been gone for hours. I looked all over the beach for you."
"I went for a run, Eve. I told you I'd be back. There was nothing for you to worry about. I'm a big girl."
Eve's expression shifted from clear concern to miffed. "You leave after a session without so much as 10 words. You're gone for hours. And I'm not supposed to worry?" Her fists doubled at her side in obvious frustration. "Next time you're going to take off, could you at least tell me the direction you're heading? Just in case something happens? My God, it's dark. You could have been mugged or even raped. We might be on a quaint little island, but it's still Southern California." The mention of the word rape stiffened Andrea's back. Bewildered, she met Eve's fiery gaze.
"I'm sorry. I'm sorry you were so concerned. I needed some air. I went for a run. Now I desperately need a shower and some food. Are you coming?"
Before Eve could speak again, Andrea turned and walked away. Halfway up the stairs to the room, Eve caught up with her. She matched Andrea's pace. The heat of anger had left her posture. She was quiet, and Andrea was glad she'd dropped the subject. She stepped into the hotel room after Eve, but walked past her quickly. The bathroom door closed with a quiet click. Andrea leaned against the jamb and locked the door. For the first time in their friendship, she was hiding something. She found it ironic that she would choose to hide the rape, just as Athene had done so long ago. The shower was as hot as she could stand it to be. Her logical mind said that she had not actually been raped. But another part of Andrea, a deeper, less formed part, could still feel the shame and pain of Davith's touch. The jeering eyes of her attackers were there, vivid in her mind. They leered at her, mocking her even from the beyond. She scrubbed her skin raw, trying to vanquish the feeling of his touch. When Andrea stepped out of the bathroom, Eve was all questions. "Do you feel any better? After your run, I mean. Did the shower help? Do you feel like eating?"
"The run was fine. I'm starving," she lied. "Would you like to order dinner in? I don't feel like going out."
Eve nodded her head while Andrea walked past her.
"Andrea, there's something wrong."
"I can feel it," Eve said. Andrea spun around facing Eve, and in a voice stronger than she intended, she said, "I'm sure I'll be fine. Stop mothering me." Andrea took a shuddered breath, pulled what was left of her composure out of its hiding place, and slapped a calm look on her face. Then, with a timid smile which implied,
"Please don't ask any more questions," she whispered, "I'm just really emotional, you know, drowning and everything. I don't think this is something I'll forget anytime soon, and we need to focus on you, not me."
Eve smiled, nodded, and reached for the phone. "I understand, Andrea." Eve called room service. She could feel Andrea's eyes on her back.
What the hell is wrong with her? Eve thought.
The girl at the front desk answered the telephone and informed Eve that there was no room service. Andrea had once again retreated to the bathroom, seemingly to dry her hair. Eve knocked at the door.
Andrea, is Chinese okay? I'll run out and get it.
The muffled reply from behind the door was hard to hear, but she thought she heard something like,
Yeah, whatever.
Eve walked the short block and a half to the only Chinese restaurant on the island. While she waited for the food, Eve stared off into the dirty fish tank. Algae covered the glass. The fish seemed to be moving in slow motion. Feelings that were clearly not hers enveloped her. Eve felt like a mother bear that needed to protect her cubs. Her hackles were raised. She was angry, but there was no reason for her fury that she could identify. Andrea was an adult. She was back safe. Eve was not her protector. If anything, Eve was the one who needed protecting. She fought to clear her thoughts, but the rage was so basic, it seemed to radiate from the center of her chest. The waiter tapped Eve on the shoulder, and she reacted to his touch with a start.
You all right, miss?
Mm-hmm, thanks, was all Eve could manage, taking the food as it was offered. What have I gotten her into? Eve murmured under her breath while she climbed the stairs to the room. When Eve entered, Andrea was sitting on the rattan love seat, writing in the notebook, tears streaming down her face, and she was trembling. Eve dropped the food on the table and sat next to her good friend. Andrea, do you want to tell me what's going on? Her big green eyes lifted from the page but looked right through Eve. I sure could use a hug. No talking. Just a hug. A few minutes later, her trembling slowed and she snuffled a thanks. It's written down. We can talk about it later. I truly want to focus on you. Let's eat and then do your regression. I know you, of all people, will understand that I don't want to taint your experience. We did come here for you. Her hands gently touched each of Eve's wrists. Then the backs of her hands grazed her friend's bruised cheek. Eve hugged her friend tightly as if she were afraid Andrea was going away forever. When she let her go, Andrea finished writing. Eve laid out the food and poured a glass of wine for each of them. The women ate, and Andrea quizzed Eve on the progress of the research project. Tell me your conclusions based on what you know from the last, what is it now? Almost 5 years of research? Almost five. I'm beginning to believe that there may not be just one answer to the question, is there reincarnation? Statistically, the findings are split. Only about 15% of the regressions are very nondescript or unable to be proven. She took a bite of food. Andrea lifted an eyebrow, waiting for her to finish. But we've some pretty amazing findings. We have a staff meeting soon to review again and pull our information together so we can try to continue the study. The grant will only fund us for another 5 or 6 months, and we need to get the dollars out of the way. I believe the research is worthwhile. I have to admit, it's been hard working with David over the past year. He's normally not available and puts very little effort into the project. I'm going to look for an additional PhD to come on board, that is, if we can get the grant extended and some outside funding. The spark that had just exploded in Eve's brain was the size of an atom bomb. Would you be interested? She asked. Andrea smiled and countered with, I'm not sure how I'd fit that into my schedule. Let me think about it, okay? Do you have any hard evidence on file? Oh, yes. We have birth and death records for about 40% of the regressions that have provided names and locations. Eve took another bite of egg foo young. On the other side, she said, chewing, we have at least a dozen Cleopatras and Marie Antoinettes, not to mention Caesars, Mark Antonys, and Joans of Arc, etc. That's why I said I believe there may not be one answer. I have noticed that in family members and close friends who participate together in this study that their regressions are, well, more detailed information is given. In these cases, there seems to be more detail from the clients, unlike the Cleopatras, that seem to follow a pattern of general information. It's like there's a strand in our DNA that holds all of the memories for the whole of mankind, and a section of the mind that holds lifetimes that we've actually taken part in. At this point, who knows about consistency? We do know we can prove that at least a large percentage of the participants have some kind of traceable past life. And that, in itself, will get us more funding, I'm sure of it. Andrea finished her food, not that she'd eaten much. How are you on Project Partners? Is everybody still there? Yes, all of them. Some of us work harder than others. Eve couldn't stop her eyes from rolling. Andrea cleared the plates, pulled the chair back over to the bed, and looked at Eve with an intense pleading that Eve couldn't clearly identify. Let me get comfortable. I'll be right out. Eve went to change into loose clothing. Are you ready, Eve? Andrea patted the bed with her right hand as Eve came out of the bathroom. Andrea set the tape deck up to record the session. Eve relaxed on the bed. Andrea smiled down at her. I'd like to try to take you to Athene's 11th year. That would make Alion how old? About 15. Alion was 4 when Athene was born. Good. Andrea opened the notebook and made a note. I'll take you to the hallway of life and then to the door that holds your 15th year as Alion. A wave of fear crashed over Eve. Although she had no idea what she was afraid of specifically, there was simply a sense of foreboding that loomed over her. She closed her eyes and listened to Andrea's voice. Chapter 21, The 11th Year. Andrea softly spoke to her in a soothing, maternal tone. She started with a progressive relaxation. Eve lay motionless on the hotel bed while she let go of the tension in her muscles. The sensation was a blessing all its own. She had been wound so tightly during the last week that she felt as if her shoulders were touching her earlobes. Eve began to relax completely, listening to the monotone voice of her dearest friend. Before she knew it, she stood in front of the door she knew would lead her to Alion's 15th year. Eve reached for the leather strap on the door in her mind when Andrea said, Eve, before you go inside, it's going to be different this time. It'll be like watching a movie. You will not suffer any physical injury. Do we agree? Nod your head if you understand. She nodded her head in her mind. Eve pulled on the door strap. As it opened, she could see Alion and Abjila waking up, bustling around the dwelling while Athene slept. Everything felt different this time. It was like being a fly on the wall in some small, round, hut-like dwelling. She knew that she was Eve, not Alion. She observed the happenings with a detached perspective, as if it were a distant echo of something long past. Andrea's voice rang in Eve's mind. Tell me what you're seeing. Everything felt mechanical. Eve was there, but she was disconnected from the experience. She explained what she saw as a third party to the scene. Alion is running. I see her go. Why is she running, Eve? Dubjila sent her to. Eve sounded robotic. What's happening now? Andrea prodded, but for long moments, Eve remained silent. She was choosing to break the agreement with Andrea. She didn't want this experience to be remote. The instant the commitment was dismissed in her mind, her internal dialogue slipped away and she was Alion and privy to her memories and thoughts. The floodgates opened on a different scene. Alion felt no matter what she did or did not do, there could be no right action. So it was in Athene's 11th year. A frail wisp of a girl, Athene always appeared more delicate than she was. Her inability to enunciate her words clearly made her seem much younger than her 11 winters. Alion spent the last winter season trying in vain to help her sister's speech impediment. This failure had alienated Athene from the other children and became a heavy weight on Alion's heart. Athene stopped speaking in public. In desperation, Alion made healing her sister her personal, all-consuming task. She had approached Dubjila and the other healers in the clan to ask for help. As a united force, they had used every herbal remedy, every banishment for negativity, and still nothing changed for Athene. Her silence was deafening to Alion. She became desperate.
She concluded that she had no other choice but to make a formal request of the Council of Elders. Even though her training was yet incomplete, she had successfully crossed the veil and walked with spirit on one other occasion. She believed if she were allowed to search the other side, her sister could be cured. When Alian reached this decision, Dubjila seemed overly pleased. "You know, my child, that Samhain is almost upon us. The crossing will be easier because of it. The Council Elders, however, will be hard-pressed to leave their clans during such a celebration. If you are to be successful in convincing them to let you cross over, you will have to reveal the mark. If that is what must be, so be it. I have no hesitation. Athene is what is important. Your mind is made up, I can see that. You must see Xavier immediately." Alian did not doubt she was right. She did not understand what the mark had to do with convincing the council, but she didn't care. Dubjila and Alian approached the gates of the village and directed their steps toward Xavier's dwelling. With a brisk rap on the door, Dubjila stepped back. The hinge squeaked as the door opened. Xavier inclined his head, motioning the two of them to enter his home. "How may I serve your needs this fine day, Dubjila?" The old healer overlooked his wink in Alian's direction as she considered her words. "'Tis not I who need your assistance." The look of confusion dampened his expression, and an inquisitive lift of his brow eased his perplexity. "And how may I assist you, Alian?" The 15-year-old hesitated for only a moment. I'm sure you're aware Athene is unable to speak clearly. Our healers have done their best, and, the thought of the Council of Elders hung at the back of her mind, stopping her from continuing. "Yes, my child, I am aware of Athene's state. How is it you think I can help?" "I do not think you can help. I think I can help. But in order to do so, I must cross the veil and seek out the cure. And for that, I do need your help."
"Yes, yes, I do say. I find myself at a loss for the correct words."
"The words, to me, are unnecessary. What I need of you is your help in convincing the Council of Elders that I must do this thing."
"There is a need for caution in this matter. I knew of your last journey, however, this ability of yours is not to be used lightly or without exhausting all other options."
Dubjila interrupted. "With the greatest of respect, there is something you do not know." Alian saw her bite her lower lip, and then the old healer began to cough as if she were unable to catch her breath. In a haggard voice, she asked, "Alian, please fetch the tonic from our dwelling." "Yes, of course, right away." She bolted out the door and rushed to fetch the herbal mixture. Sprinting out of the palisade to the grove, Alian snatched the small clay jug and ran back to Xavier's. She swung open the door and bustled in with Dubjila's tonic. Her mouth gaped. The old healer had a pleading look on her face as she held his gaze. Alian encouraged Dubjila to drink, placing the jug in her hands. "In a moment, Alian, please show Xavier the mark." She slipped the shoulder of her smock down to expose her birthmark. Xavier gently rotated her to gain better lighting and stared in disbelief at the symbol on her back.
"Well," he said, stammering, "I will first need to speak with the other healers before I send for the elders. Please leave me now. I have much to consider."
After 3 full days of deliberation, the clan healers had reached a consensus, and Xavier called for a council meeting. Runners were dispatched to the highest-ranking druids of the 2 nearest clans. Within 3 days of Samhain, they arrived. Arthfiel was sighted first, and in a flurry of activity, he was ushered to Xavier's dwelling. The high-ranking druid was offered a basin of scented water, in which he cleansed his face and hands. Alian herself served honeyed mead to him in a bronzed chalice. He was an imposing figure, and something in his eyes shook Alian to her very core. This man knew her in a way that no other person could. He knew her inner thoughts, her fears, and her powers. His hard blue eyes scanned her openly, but with not a shred of lustful intention.
He spoke in a deep baritone voice. May I see the mark?
Dubjila rose and walked to her eldest charge. She whispered in Alion's ear that this was necessary. Alion relinquished the jug of mead to Dubjila and slipped the shoulder of her gown from its resting place. The mark he wished to see lay bare for his inspection. He looked intently at the circular form that rested atop the triad-shaped lines. One brow lifted in understanding as he gave a curt nod. That will do. Thank you, lass. The door swung open and a hooded figure stepped inside. With great respect, Xavier and Arthfiel greeted Matok. He too was offered a fresh basin of scented water. Once he was comfortable, Alion filled his cup with mead. Matok did not ask to see the mark. He simply took Alion's hand in his and looked into her eyes as if searching for recognition. I knew your mother. You are her very image, and yet I believe I see the lion's strength in your eyes, he said. Alion found Matok to be flattering, but she knew she bore no resemblance to a roque, and she had never heard Kanut referred to as a lion. She looked at him as if confused. Matok was younger than Xavier and Arthfiel. His smile was warm and invitingly friendly. His noble forehead looked even higher than it was, as his hair was shaved in a tonsure. She knew that the belief was that by shaving his head in this manner, he allowed a more direct connection with the gods and their wishes. He released her hand and brought his thumb to her lips, grazing them softly. Alion blushed. He then turned his attention to his peers. Dubjila addressed the Council of Elders. Her voice was firm, yet respectful. As the caretaker for Alion of the Red Hair, I formally request that the girl not be present for the deliberations. Alion was stunned, but said nothing. She waited for a response from the men, who now sat leaning toward each other, speaking in hushed whispers. Her palms felt damp. Her chest muscles tightened in anticipation. When Xavier's silky smooth voice sounded, Alion flinched. We are in agreement, Alion of the Red Hair. In the interest of caution, we will now ask you to retire to your lodgings so we may confer in private. Respectfully, she bowed her head and exited the building. Evening settled over the village in a misty haze that felt chilly upon her face. The wind roamed the tree branches with whispering rustles of bark and leaf. She walked home, disappointed. Alion consoled herself by believing that she understood why they had chosen thusly. Athene was waiting while Alion came through the door. The sisters exchanged greetings. After feeding Athene, Alion tucked her sister into bed, humming softly as the child drifted off. She watched her sister sleep, remembering how tiny she had been at birth. Her thoughts drifted to Kanut. She was still desperately injured by his abandonment. Kanut had been gone for so long that she felt sure he would never return. Alion fantasized that he would come and take them away with him. She imagined his strong arms picking her up as he had held her on the day of Athene's birth. She wanted him to carry her away. Alion no longer wanted to be taught anything at all. She wanted him to rescue her from the unending hours of lessons and practice. If it were not for Athene, she would never have asked for the additional training. There was no resentment, only guilt at what she saw as her failure in assisting her sister. She dismissed the fantasies, and one single tear trickled down her face. He is never returning, she thought. Her thoughts turned to the council. She desperately wanted to know what was being said in Xavier's dwelling. 2 days passed, and still Dubjila did not come and give her the decision. The waiting was frustrating, and it was all Alion could do to keep herself sequestered with the coming feast preparations underway. She settled for cooking game others delivered. The dwelling was active, with the healers of the village coming and going with plans and arrangements. Alion could see Athene was very excited about the feast. Although no one had singled her out, it was only a matter of time before her speech caused concern. The abnormality would cause Athene's womanhood ceremony to be delayed.
If the issue could not be rectified, Alian refused to think of that and consoled herself in the fact that there were still 2 full cycles of the sun before her sister would be ready to take her vows as an adult. She knew also that she was asking a great deal of the council. If they turned her down, she would need to try on her own to cross over to the other world, with or without their permission, she vowed. Thanks so much for joining me for this episode of The Mark of a Druid, and stop back again. Pick up the next episode at rhondacarpenter.com or themarkofadruid.com, soon to be live as a new site. Very excited about that. So until next time, thanks and take care.